All right. Everybody ready to talk SQL Server? Oh, come on, you can be more excited than that. Yeah, all right. Everybody say SQL Server. Sweet. See, now I can say, look, full room to my boss. All right. Yes. Yeah. Them, yes. You know, you stay. All right, let's talk SQL Server. So, apparently I have to hit the red button. There we go. We're ready. All right, so first, big round of applause for the sponsors. Yay. Okay, great. All right, let's move on. All right, so we're going to talk the in-memory OLTP, right? I think that's why you're here, right? So my name is Scott Klein. I'm a senior technical evangelist for Microsoft out of Redmond, and they asked me to come and talk about a couple sessions on SQL Server. So without further ado, I don't like these slides that you know brag about what I do and who I am. So if there's any questions about what we talk about today, there's my blog, there's my email address, there's my Twitter handle, right? I'll make this deck available. Feel free to email me, right? Tweet me, I don't care. I'm happy to talk further about this after, right? Okay, great. And I'll put this slide up again after so you can write it down or take a picture, whatever. But what we're going to talk about today is in-memory, right? This is a huge announcement for Microsoft for SQL Server 2014, right? The ability to say, great, I can get better performance for my application out of SQL Server without upgrading my box, without adding memory, without adding CPU, right? And this is why it's enticing, okay? So we're going to provide an overview. We're then going to get an inside look into how this stuff works. And then we'll look at management, right? So a little deeper into how does it manage memory, how does it do garbage collection, things like that, okay? And then if you guys want to go deeper after that, again, I'll put my contact information up. Happy to talk deeper. So let's talk overview. All right. So what made this possible is there's several trends in the business, right? From hardware and software trends, right? There's been a need, and there's been some over the last few years. A lot of companies have said, "Look, we want to get better performance," and in-memory has been one of these trends for quite a while, but no one has really been able to pull it off successfully without migrating an entire database or without having to add memory or do a bunch of SAN stuff or some of these memory card things, right? That you have to put in your box, right? So but also driving this is from, and you guys know this, from a SQL Server perspective, right? We need high transaction. You know, a lot of companies say, I need high transaction, high volume throughput, right? If you're familiar with these high insert update type of scenarios, there's a lot of locking and contention in your database, correct? Right? How do we get around that, right? So this is why in memory, right? So there's a lot of need. So think about this for a second, right? Credit card transactions or online gambling or gaming or things like this, right? Think about it from a standpoint where there's you got football, right? We call soccer, but football, right? And think about that brief moment in time where a player is awarded a penalty kick, right? So there's this brief moment of time between when he's awarded and the penalty kick and when he actually takes the kick, right? Think of it from an online gambling perspective, right? The number of bets or transactions that take place during that few seconds, right? So anybody ever been to Las Vegas? A few of you? Okay. If you go to a casino, right? Not that I go gamble. Let's get that right? I don't gamble. But when I've been to conferences in Las Vegas, a lot of these casinos have rooms dedicated to just sports gambling. They'll have rooms probably four or five times bigger than this room with one wall that must have hundreds of TVs with every game known to man playing, right? And you can bet on anything on any game, right? In baseball, whether the next pitch is a strike or a curveball or a ball or right, or he gets a hit or things like that, right? Any aspect of a game they commit. And so they need a high transaction, high throughput system to be able to capture those transactions, right? Without losing anything, because if they lose a transaction, they lose money, right? from credit card transactions, right? Think about the number of transactions that are going through a banking system at any given time, right? And if I take out money, that's not one transaction. That's several transactions, debit, credit, things like that, right? So we need systems to be able to handle that, okay? So from a software, so from the need side, what has allowed us to do this is several hardware trends over the last, let's say, 4, 5, 6 years, right? Number one is the increase of cores per CPU, right? This has just been going on forever, right? Every time, every, what, 6, 12, 18 months, a new processor comes out that has more cores and more processing power, right? On the same side, memory prices is just dropping drastically, right? I can, 10 years ago, a gig of RAM was expensive. Now a gig of RAM is a couple dollars, right? So it drops pretty quick. And at the same time, the other thing is, and not as significant, but as important, is the clock rate, right? You can't really overclock PCs anymore. It's kind of stalled at 3 gigahertz or something like that, right? So it's you really can't overclock CPUs that much anymore. But the two significant ones are just the number of cores per CPU is increasing and the dramatic decline in price of memory, right? So this allows us to say, sweet, we can take and use your existing hardware and get better performance by moving things into in-memory, right? If you need to add memory, great, it's cheap, right? But we can still use your current hardware. How many of you once have to add or buy new hardware because your system outgrows it, right? A lot of you, right? You're like, crap, right? You can hide a lot of bad code by throwing more hardware at a query, right? You can't hide it, And so things like this is, okay, great, I can use my existing system in this case. I don't have to go add new memory or a CPU. If you need to, it's cheap to do, right? So this is what allows us to do this and say, okay, great, we've got these technologies, CPU and memory, that allow us to move things, right? And not taking the entire database either, right? Some of our vendors said, well, we can't take individual objects, let's move the database. Microsoft said, we can do this a little better, right? So that's what we're going to talk about, okay? So it used to be codenamed Hekaton, right? Hekaton is the, I think, Greek word for 1,000 or something like that, right? Really, it's just a high-performance memory-optimized engine managed by SQL Server. It's not an add-on. You don't have to make any changes to SQL Server once you install it. It is integrated right into SQL Server that takes advantage of your existing hardware. This is what the code word is Hekaton, but we just now call it the in-memory OLTP, right? Built in right into the SQL Server engine, right? So there's several architecture pillars that we need to talk about, right? So from we talked about memory, but let's talk about a few of these, okay? So memory optimized. So basically what we're saying is we're just taking advantage of these declining memory prices and more cores per CPU and leveraging that to say we can use your existing hardware, right? Things like, so take advantage of no buffer pool, take advantage of, stream-based storage, things like that, right? What we do, and we'll show you this in a demo later on, and we'll show you how we do this, but basically what we're saying is we're going to take individual objects from your database, tables or stored procedures, and compile those as native code, right? That's it. And we're going to take the memory from that. So I can say I'm going to take table A, compile that as, make that in memory, so we take that table, compile that as native code. It's still managed by SQL Server, but we're going to take the memory from that and store that, or take the data from that and store that in memory, right? And it's all managed by SQL Server. And if we need to, we can get better performance by moving a stored procedure as native code as well, right? And there's some things we have to talk about that, right? But it's actually fairly easy. So basically we're saying we're going to use T-SQL and say, just a couple extra parameters on your create table or create store procedure statement that says these are now memory optimized. So compile these as native code, right? As a DLL. Those objects still show up in SQL Server, right? There's a table, bam, right? You don't have to do anything. You don't have to manage it any other way. It still shows up, right? It's fully ACID support, right? Core Engine uses lock-free algorithms, so there's no that locking and contention. Well, no locks and latches anymore. The contention goes away. I'll show you that in a demo, right? And it's really because it's integrated into SQL, you don't have to learn anything new. There's just a couple new parameters to your create table and create store procedure statements. That's it. All we're saying is we're going to take a table and or store procedure, and we make it very easy for you because you don't have to go guess which ones you have to go migrate, right? We'll show you this. This is a nice little report that says, hey, we recommend you migrate this one, things like that, right? So we make it very easy. We'll show you that, right? Just make sense so far? So instead of moving the entire database, we're going to move objects, right? So how does this really work? Okay, so what we have here is a very simple example, an existing SQL Server application, right? And in this really simplified model, I have three tables, table one, table two, and table three, right? And each table has an index. Very simple example, right? At any given time, you're accessing the workload, right? The table's right to the buffer pool. You also have SQL queries that are either called by dynamic SQL or store procedures. These are accessing the table, right? So what we do is SQL Server has a report that says, all right, which tables do you want to migrate, right? So you look at this report, and I will show you this report. So we run this report, and it says, you know what? We're going to take table 1 and table 2 and migrate those to in-memory. So first of all, we create a new memory-optimized table file group that says this is optimized for in-memory. Then we take tables and say we're going to migrate those to this new file group, right, that's optimized for in-memory. Okay, that makes sense so far? We good? Right. Okay, so table 3, now so let's get some terminology here. So table one and table 2 are in-memory. We'll call those memory tables. Table 3 is still, we'll call it disk-based, right? That is not in-memory, right? That's still disk-based table, right? So, three things to note. First, your database is still the same, right? We didn't change really anything. We just said we're going to take table 1, table 2, migrate it. We didn't really change much, right? And they're still part of SQL Server, right? Second, storage. You see a new kind of storage instead of that memory-optimized file group, right? It's just another file group. So just like you create a standard file group, you create another file group, but this time you're saying it's memory-optimized file group. Still SQL Server, still managed in memory, right? So it's just a different kind of file group, right? Third, the index is not persisted to storage. And this is important to understand, right? On a normal table, right, all your indexes are persisted to disk, correct? In memory, in Hekaton, they are not, right? So if for whatever reason we have to rebuild that table, we rebuild that index on the fly. Right, we don't store it. We don't persist it to disk. Right, we kind of cache it somewhere. We persist it to disk only so that we can rebuild it. But it is not persisted from a table perspective. Right, does that make sense? So if we have to reboot SQL Server for whatever reason, we can still rebuild those indexes, but we rebuild those indexes on the fly. Right. But it is not persisted to disk. Right. So the question then is: so I've got a table 1, table 2, and in memory. Table 3 is still disk-based. How do I query this, right? So this is where we have to understand the different ways to query this. I can still use dynamic SQL. I can still use store procedures, but this is a little different, right? So we have what's called query interop and then standard in-memory, right? Let me just summarize it this way, right? I can take a table like we saw, move that into in-memory. I can take a store procedure and move that into in-memory, right? The difference here is that an in-memory store procedure can only call an in-memory table, okay? A disk-based store procedure can call both. Does that make sense, right? So you have to determine that if I move a table, if I have a store procedure and it's doing a join somewhere, right, and if it's joining three or four tables, and one of these is a high transaction table, you have to determine what's it worth moving, right? Because if I move one of those tables, right, I can't move that store procedure, right? Because an in-memory store procedure cannot call a disk-based table, right? So this is the interop, right? So a disk-based store procedure can call both, right? And you still get great performance gains just by moving the table, but you'll get better by moving the store procedure as well. Right, so you have to understand, what's it worth to me? How much work will it take to, if I have to dissect a store procedure and change some of my store procedure logic? Does that make sense? Okay, great. Right, And then, right, so I've got native compiled, stored procedures, and schema, and there's the Hecaton compiler. So basically what it's doing, by moving some of these stored procedures into in memory, what I do is I actually get to bypass some of the processing logic that sort of like disk-based stored procedures go through. And if we have time, we'll talk about that, right? But basically we're saying, all right, we're going to take that stored procedure, compile it into native code. And we have to understand that a disk-based stored procedure can call both. An in-memory stored procedure can only call an in-memory table. Okay? We good so far? All right. So with that, let me jump out and show you a demo. All right? So this is actually going to be pretty demo-heavy, this session. All right? So let me make sure I'm still connected. I'm connected. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to fire up an RDP into a... Oh, you can't see that, can you? I do this last time, too. All right. Where's it at? That one. So we're going to connect into a box that I have sitting in my office, actually in one of our server rooms. And this box has, I think, at least 32 core, 128 gigabytes of RAM, and 4 SSD drives. So it's a pretty beefy box. Agreed? Okay. So here I have SQL Server 2014, right? And I've got my ticket reservation, very simple database, my ticket reservation system, and there's only like a couple tables, you know, like one table in here, right? It's an extremely complicated database. Right, but I do have a few stored procedures, right? Some that do inserts and deletes and updates and reads and things like that, right? Okay, but then we have this MDW database. So when you set up Hecaton, what it requires is you have your normal database, then you have this database that's collecting metrics, right? This is the MDW database. You can call it whatever. I just call it MDW, right? All right. I don't need that. I already got it running. So what I have here is I have this very simple application. Okay? I think I set this up before. So what I'm going to look at here is the current CPU usage down here and the current locks and latches, right? So I'm going to run this, and I'm going to run it without migrating anything to in-memory, okay? And we're going to run it 3 times. So we're going to run it without migrating anything to in-memory. So let's just start this. And we'll see how many transactions we get, right? So we're getting about 900 transactions times 1,000, so about 9,000 transactions a second, right? But notice I have low CPU, and I've got about 68,000 to 70,000 locks and latches. So it's high contention, right? You see that? What we want is the opposite, right? We don't want any contention. We want things moving in memory, okay? So let's stop this. And I will open code in another demo just to make it easy. What I'm going to do is I'm just going to go migrate. So step one, let's migrate the table. So this is behind the scenes. It's going to migrate the table, right? And let's run this again, right? How many transactions, what's this going to go to, do you think? 4,000. Just by moving a table into in-memory, we're getting significant increase, right? Anywhere between 12 to 15 times performance just by moving in memory. Again, you know, I don't know how many, you know, again, it's, you know, 32 core, 128 gig of RAM, so it's a pretty beefy box, right? But again, you see, just by moving the table, I get significant increase, okay? All right. But notice, more importantly, how much CPU I'm using and how much, what are my locks and latches? Zero! Right, this is what we want. We want no contention, right? All right, let's do this even better. So let's stop this. Now let's migrate. Oh, you know what? I forgot. All right. So as we ran this, there's a nice little wizard. So if I click on this metric database that's collecting all the metrics, so if I go to reports and click on a transaction performance analysis overview, I think that's it. I always get these two reports mixed up. Yep, this is it, right? I run this, and it tells me, let's look at our tables. It says, it gives us this magic quadrant. Error, why is it getting an error? Data source has not been supplied for data source scan overview. Oh, you liar. All right. Awesome. What, tell us in a SOAR procedure. Yes, okay. So, probably because I ran this, I forgot to run this before I ran the table. That's probably why I got that error. But the same thing. So if I click on the table, what it gives us is that magic quadrant. Have you seen that Gartner quadrant, right? It gives us this quadrant that says, here's the tables that we have analyzed that we think you should move, right? You don't have to guess. It's almost like this. It's the magic quadrant. But, on the x-axis, it says amount of work, you know, how much work it would take to migrate versus how much performance gains you're going to get. So anything up in that quadrant, you know, in the upper right quadrant, it says, we recommend you migrate these tables, right? So we make it very easy for you. This other one, store procedure, says, look, here's a couple store procedures that you might want to consider migrating as well, right? So built-in report that helps you analyze, you don't have to do that basically takes the guesswork out of, you know, under trying to analyze what tables and store procedures I should move. All right. So we're going to then say, all right, well, let's migrate these store procedures. So let's go migrate store procedure. Done. All right. What kind of numbers are we going to get now? Now, I don't think this is realistic, right? But it does show the power, right? So on average, what we're showing people, right? So again, zero locks and latches. It's all memory CPU. By moving the store procedure as well, we're not utilizing the entire CPU. So, you know, this is kind of optimum, right? But I think what we need to do is I need to go in and tune SQL a little bit, because 70,000 transactions, so that's more realistic, I think, right? Is these kind of numbers. But what we're seeing as we go to customers and implement this, depending on their type of system, they're getting anywhere between 7 to 25 times performance just by moving the tables and store procedures, right? And you saw the performance just by moving a table, right? So over in, what country was that? Over here in Europe. Bwin, you guys familiar with Bwin? I think it's a gaming gambling company, right? They used a CTP1 version of SQL 2014. They went from 15,000 transactions a second to 250,000 transactions a second. Didn't add any hardware, didn't add any memory or CPU, just installed SQL Server 2014, moved a couple tables and sort procedures into memory, bam, right? So you start to see the kind of the performance we can get out of that, right? Just by moving a couple objects, right? So this is what Hackathon, this is what in-memory is all about, okay? Any questions? So in this table, it's just, yes. So these are complete inserts and updates. So if we were to look at the code behind, it's doing just a ton of inserts and updates. So how is this persistent? How's what persistent? So in memory. In memory only. So we'll talk about transaction logging here in a second, right? Because people start freaking out about that, right? You know, what happens if I pull the cord out? Okay, come on. We are still logging transactions. We're just doing it a little different, but we're still logging. So for whatever reason, you've got some, some guy, you know, the vacuum lady comes through and knocks out the cord out of your box. We can still recover, okay? We're still logging, and you can still recover. Just not what's happening now is when you reboot the server, it's going to take a little longer to boot up because we have to now load all that data into in-memory. But we can still recover, right? Now, I'm going to say yes, but I'm going to show you because there's an option on the create table that says you want to do schema or schema and data. So, because maybe you have a table that's just like a transient type, and you want it in memory and you want it high performant, but you don't care if that data is persisted, right? So maybe it's a transient type table, so you don't care if we have to rebuild that, right? So you can just say just store the schema. So if I rebuild, I'm not rebuilding, not loading that from into in memory, right? So you got some options. Yes. Okay, we're actually talking about that, right? We will talk about best practices. We'll actually get to that here in a second, right? Because so basically, and we'll show you that. But just a quick answer says, If best practice states that you look at the properties of your table and you want 2 times the amount of memory for that table, right? So how much data, if it says, okay, I've got, 1 gig of data storage, I want 2 gig of data, 2 gig of RAM dedicated to that table, right? So it's, you have to be smart about what data do I move in. And that's why I said earlier, the tagline or the caveat is you may have to add data if there's an important, you may have to add memory if you don't have enough for an important table, right? But the concept is that, hopefully you're running this on a system that, doesn't have 8 gig of RAM, right? So hopefully you're going to run it on a system that's significant enough to run, SQL Server 2014. Right, but again, there might be the time where, okay, I need to add a few gig of RAM to be able to house this table. Does that make sense? Okay, all right. So with that, I love this demo. So let's, as long as the reports work, I love the demo. All right, let's keep going. So let's start talking about inside look. Right. So I will show you code. I'm going to break open code. We're going to walk through some stuff, and we got a couple cool demos we're going to do. But this is essentially the syntax, right? This is your create table. We did not change any syntax. All we did is we said we have to add a few things, but we didn't change. Like all you're doing is you're just modifying your additional statements, right? So for example, right? Memory optimized equals on. That's what you're going to do to say this table is now an in-memory table. That's it, right? Durability, this is your durability. What are you asked if I say, okay, if I want schema, or durability equals schema, or durability equals schema and data. So if you want to keep your data in memory, schema and data. But if you, like I said, if you have that transient, if there's a table that you want high performance, but you don't care if the data gets lost, like a transient or a historical table, something like that, just say schema, right? What'll happen is that if you have to reboot, that data's lost, right? But you can still, it's still an in-memory table, right? Okay. Next, non-clustered hash index with bucket count equals 1 million, right? So that 1 million, let's talk about that. So these are indexes. We're not talking about indexes, right? This is a hash index. This is a non-B-tree type of index, right? So the statement is saying that customer ID is a hash index and primary key with a bucket count of 1 million. So best practice states that the number of buckets, so bucket count, should be twice the number of rows you expect in the table, right? So essentially what this is a bucket is really a pointer to the rows in the in-memory table, okay? But best practice states that you have to be smart, and you can always kind of rebuild the table, things like that, if you need to keep growing. But this is a plan ahead. How many maximum rows do I expect in this table and make the bucket count twice that? Does that make sense? Right? Because that way you're not, because that's going to help with performance and things like that, right? And I'm not limited to just one bucket count. You can have multiple hash indexes on any given table, right? So here I've got another hash index, another index to, I can have multiple indexes on a table in normal SQL. I can do the same thing here, right? I want to be careful, though. I don't want 4, 5, 6 hash indexes on a table. I just want to be careful what's the right number for me. So this is where you start doing your homework and, okay, how many hash indexes do I need, okay? But you at least need one for an in-memory table, right? So a non-clustered hash index, that's my primary key. What's your bucket count? Remember, that's got to be twice the number of rows that you expect in this table. Does that make sense? Okay, so how does this work? I'm basically creating, like you saw, create table, like that syntax, that basically at that point when you run that T-SQL says, all right, I'm going to take this table from disk and compile it into a DLL. That's all it's doing. That DLL is produced. It is then managed by SQL Server. It's not loaded into SQL Server. It's not loaded as a SQL CLR. It's not that. It is a DLL on the disk, but it's managed by SQL Server. So what will you? And I'll show you this in a demo. It shows up in my list of tables just like any other table. Okay. The caveat though is that if I have to recreate, if I have to add a column to that table and modify that, I basically have to drop and recreate the table. I can't alter table like I can a disk based. But the data is still persisted, right? Okay, so a few limitations, right? No DML triggers, no XML or CLR data types, right? That just sort of makes sense, because if we have a high transaction system, typically you don't find those data types in a high transactional table, right? But they're looking at how to put these in there for version 2, right? Rows are at most 80-60 bytes, so no off-row data and no lobs, right? Lobs, we see that a lot of our large ISVs use lobs. They're looking at that very heavily for V2, right? No foreign key support and no check constraint. Why would there be no foreign key support? Think about it. If I have to move a table, right, you know, I lose my primary key, foreign key type of constraints, right? But they're looking at that as well. So a lot of these, it used to be very early on that even, you know, identity columns weren't supported, but they actually came back and prior to the GA release, identity columns are supported, right? So a lot of these, they're actually will be fixing hopefully in V2. But it's an awesome V1, right? Okay, store procedure. Okay, this is a store procedure. So same thing, right? Native compilation. That's it. That's the syntax to say compile this as a native store procedure. That's it, right? But it does require a few other things, right? Is the does schema binding, right? This says that you cannot drop the in-memory table until you drop the store procedure, right? So if I have the store procedure, so in that demo we did, I can't drop the table until I drop the store procedure, because we've done schema binding there, right? The context, so I have to execute as owner, right? If I don't have that, the create store procedure statement will fail, so I have to tell it who am I executing as. Begin atomic, so basically this creates a transaction if there isn't one automatically, right? And then otherwise it'll also create a save point, as it says, and then transaction level, right? These settings are fixed at create time. So the transactional basically says there's several transaction levels for how you, when you create your database and things like that, right? The transaction license level will be executing, it basically says what transaction level, and snapshot is the default recommended one, if you don't specify, and then what language you're running into, right? But that is the general syntax for creating a store procedure. Right, you have to have native compilation, schema binding, execute as caller, begin atomic, and then to transaction isolation level. Right, and we'll actually see this in a demo here really quick. Okay, all right. So the same thing, just like we did for a table, create a proc. It does a query optimization. So when you compile that, it does a query optimization in the engine, because it's still being the query is still being passed into the engine. So it actually does a query optimization when you compile that and stores that in SQL. So that when it's called, it can pull that out of memory real quick. And then just does a code generation compilation into a DLL, and then the DLL is produced. We'll actually, in the next demo, show you what these DLLs look like. Okay? All right. So a couple more things, and then we will jump into a demo. Okay. So interpreted SQL versus store procedures versus compiled procs, right? We touched on this a little bit, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. But interpreted SQL basically says, right, if I have either a T-SQL proc or a dynamic SQL, it can access both types of tables. Like you saw, it's not as performant, right? But it has a full SQL Server surface, meaning basically 99% of the syntax works against SQL, right? So if you got ad hoc queries or, you know, doing reporting or things like that, or you want to do some quick testing and don't want to have to, like if you have a fairly complex store procedure that's doing a bunch of joins, right, then just keep your store procedure that way, and you'll still get the performance benefits just by migrating the table, right? But if you can migrate the store procedure only, this is where you're going to get the best performance, right? It can only access memory optimized tables, but there are some things it may be about 95% of the T-SQL syntax, right? And I've got some examples, I think. Let me look real quick here. Well, I'll give you a link, right? So typically, most of your store procedures will work against an in-memory store procedure, right? But there's times if you can move the store procedure, right? But it's up to you to determine, do I need to start breaking up these stored procedures, or how much work is it going to take to migrate the stored procedure if you're accessing, like, we've seen stored procedures that do, you know, joins between four, five, six tables. Doesn't make sense to migrate all six tables, so what do, right? So that's kind of up to you, right? But you saw the benefits, right? All right, so with that, let's do some more demos. All right, so I've got local SQL Server running here. Let me get rid of that. Yep, I'm working on that right now. For some dumb reason, when I jump out, it switches back to extend mode. So I have to change it back to duplicate mode. All right, so I've got SQL Server here. And what I'm going to do, perf. Okay. So here's the syntax. So what I'm doing is I'm saying this is, I'm going to basically create a stored procedure, and this syntax doesn't change. You guys should see this. This is a standard create database T-SQL statement, right? I'm not doing anything out of the ordinary here, right? But I'm also saying, all right, add a file group, but contains memory optimized data. Okay, that's all we're doing. Okay. And then I'm basically adding that file group to my database, right? That's all I'm doing, right? Add file to the file group here, right? So I'm adding that to Scooter Mod, right? So you do this all the time in normal SQL, right? All we're saying is we're adding one that's memory optimized. That's all you're doing, right? Does that make sense? Right? Then for best practices, I'm saying set the optimized level to snapshot. I want the isolation level as a snapshot isolation level, right? Okay, so let's run that real quick. Done. Okay, so if we refresh this is for some reason takes a second, so we'll refresh this. And while it's refreshing, I don't know why it takes a minute on my box, so I'm going to use that database. Okay, and now I'm going to say create table as in memory optimized, right? So you saw this in the slides. I'm basically saying create sales order and memory optimized equals on, durability equals schema and data, and I want my bucket count 2 million for some reason. I just picked some large number. It could be 100,000. Just depends, again, how many rows you expect in that database, in that table, right? So I just said 2 million, right? So let's run that. Okay, so there's my Scooter OLTP database over here, right? So let's run this statement, create table. Okay, so if we refresh this, right, there's my sales order table. So again, this is in memory, but it shows up and managed just like in SQL Server, just like any other table, right? Awesome. There's my columns. Sweet, right? So, again, you don't have to learn anything new, okay? Now, next, so you can look at this, and so there's some, if you're familiar with some of the DMVs, so from SysTables, there's some new columns called, if we look at this, is memory optimized, durability, and durability description, right? So if you were to do a select star from sys.tables, anything with a is memory optimized equals one is an in-memory table. Right, so some new columns in our sys.tables and sys.objects, right? Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to, there's nothing in there, but we're going to do, let's insert 500,000 rows into this table, and let's watch how long it takes, okay? So again, this is a, T1, this is an in-memory table, right? So let's insert into here. Okay, 5 seconds, right, to insert 500,000 rows, right, in a loop, okay? Typically, if you do this, you'd say insert into, bulk insert, things like that. But that's not the purpose of this, right? This is just to show performance, right? So 5 seconds to insert 500,000 rows, right? Now let's create a disk-based table, right? A standard disk-based table. Okay? Now let's do the same thing and insert into that disk-based table. So 5 seconds for in-memory. How long for disk-based? So I think for now we can go get some coffee, probably go exercise a little bit, right? 9 seconds, right? So about twice the speed for 500,000 rows. When I ran this earlier, it was earlier today it was 4 seconds for in-memory and about 14 seconds for so anywhere between 2 to 3 times, right? So But let's do this a little differently. Maybe I should have looked at what's that? I'm not quite sure I understand. Well, that's true. Yeah, so I am writing back. But even earlier with that, even with the reporting back, it was like 4 seconds, right? So, yeah, so there is the report back, and that's fine. We are taking that in consideration, right? He's saying, you know, it takes time for these to come back, right? But still, right, I'm still almost getting 2 to 3 times the performance just with even with those coming back, right? So, all right, what I'm going to do now is I'm going to do a select star from the in-memory table, top 100. All right, what do you see here? What's wrong with this picture? Yeah, the order, right? In a normal table, if I did an identity column 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, right? It would sort, I would get 1 through 500,000, right? Huh? Maybe. Well, most of the time, right? Most of the time I get it back. But why am I not getting this? So this is because we're doing a hash table in the entry order, right? So the rows are out of order. So I can sort these just by doing, all right, order by, right, 1, 2, 3, 4, right? Things like that. So very simple example. All right, so what we're going to do now is we're going to delete from both tables. Oh, you know what? I didn't want to do that. Let me cancel that. All right. That wasn't part of that. I totally screwed up that part of the demo. We're going to do this again because. All right.
You just want to see if it was better now.
Yeah, I didn't want to do that. All right. 5. So, yeah, that wasn't. All right. Let's do this again because. So that was 5 seconds again. This will probably be again like 9 seconds or something like that. Why don't you make a liar of me and do it in 5 seconds? 8 seconds. All right. Almost. All right. So what I'm going to do now is let's delete from sales order. Watch how long it takes. 0 seconds. And let's delete from sales order disk, the disk-based table. Four seconds, right? So about 5 times the time, right? So you're starting to see these are very simple examples, I know, but just to help you understand the performance just by moving a table into in-memory, right? You're going to get, you know, minimum 4 to 5 to 6 times the performance, you know, anywhere between 5 to 10 times the performance just by moving a table into in-memory, right? All right, now let's do something a little different, right? So we deleted. What we're going to do now is we're going to create a store procedure. So everything we've done up to now is just the table is in memory, right? So what we're doing now is we're basically moving an insert into, you know, a store procedure into in memory, right? Now let's run this and see how long it takes. 0 seconds, right? If you don't believe me, 500,000 rows. So just by, right, 0 seconds, probably 0.00001 seconds, right, to move, right, to put 500,000 rows just by moving a table and a store procedure into in-memory, right? Does that make sense? This is awesome. What do you think so far?
Promising.
It's all right. I've seen better. All right, you out. No, I'm kidding. All right. Right now, it's in, I think, so the at least enterprise, I don't remember, there was talk about Whether they're going to do it in standard, I don't know if it's in standard. I'll find out. But in enterprise right now, right? What's that?
What are the risks?
What are the risks?
Yeah, what is the hedge?
Yeah, exactly. What's in it for me? So. Well, because think about the size. Right, so, yeah, the question is, why aren't all tables in memory? So, it doesn't make sense to put all your tables in memory, right? For example, you know, okay, let me give you some real world examples, right? So, we had some large ISVs, right? And so, again, think about what the purpose of moving tables into in memory is, right? We want it, like you saw in the first demo, we want to get rid of the locking and contention, right? And that means the locking and contention is caused by people trying to hit the same table at the same time, whether it's inserts, updates, or even reads, right? You got that contention, right? So by moving these out of off disk into in memory, that contention goes away, right? Well, no, because everything's in memory. There's not, right? Because we remember there's no B-tree type of, right? It's not disk-based. There's no pages, right? By moving it into memory, there's no pages, right? So we have to think about this in terms of why not move all the tables out? Well, because, you know, you may have a table that's just, let me just summarize it this way. I'm not going to get any benefit or any performance by moving a table that's 80% read. It's not meant for that, right? We're looking for tables that is like you saw in this first demo, that it's high insert update, right, where you're going to get a lot of contention. If I'm doing a lot of reading and no one's writing, there's no contention on that table, right? Make sense? So it's what meant for these tables. So this is why we wouldn't put the entire database. One, you probably don't have enough memory on your server for the entire database. So, but two, and more important, is what are these tables that are causing your bottlenecks, your performance bottlenecks? Those are the tables we want to look at, right? Those are the ones where there's a lot of contention. Those are the ones that we want to move into in memory. Does that make sense? Right? So where's your tables that have a lot of contention? There are a lot of, like, you know, a lot of inserts and updates, high transactions, right? And that's why we have this report that says this is how this table has a lot of contention. You might want to move that, right? What are the risks? The risks are, off the top of my head, if you've got you're moving the table, I don't think there's that much risk. But if you've got a stored procedure that's fairly complex that's accessing that table, you're now doing some level of rewrite of your stored procedure, right? So now you're going back and you're going into some QA and testing and things like that, right? So you've got that type of risk. Not a high risk, but you now have to go and circle back and do some testing again, right? So again, this is why I said earlier, right, that this is a little plan ahead, right? So this is why we said here, properties. So this is two things, right? So let's look at the properties of this table or this database, right? So I'll answer your question here in a second, okay, as soon as this comes up. Yes, that's right. That's because we don't move the entire database into in memory yet, and probably won't either. So this is where you say, okay, how much memory do I have on my box, right? And this is my laptop. I need more. Yeah, this is only 8 gig. I need a lot more memory on my laptop, right? But this is where. And this is why I did put the caveat at the very beginning that says there might be times where you're saying, okay, I do definitely need to add some memory to my box, right? So it depends on, this is where you go and say, how much memory do I have? But more importantly, this is why I was trying to pull this up. You're looking at the size of your table. How much information is in the table? I need 2x of that, right? So you have to be careful to say, all right, how many tables am I willing to move, and how much memory is that going to take? So best practice states, twice the amount of the size of the table. Great. If I have, a 16 gig box, but my data, if I'm adding up all the data from my tables and that's 12 gig, I don't have enough memory. So I either have to add another 8, 16 gig, or say I'm not moving these tables, right?
from there, maybe if you get more customers, you get into problems.
Oh, I did drop the database, didn't I? Yeah. That's why it's not there. That's why it's not coming up, because I can't find it. All right. Well, actually, I'll pull it up again, because in the next demo, I'll actually create another database. So, yeah, I understand what you're saying, right? So it depends on, you know, this isn't, you know, this is where you have to go, how do I utilize this technology in my environment, right? So, if you're a hoster, right, you have to look at and go, maybe this does not fit in this environment. Or maybe it does, maybe we're just saying, okay, because, let's see. But it's on a database level. So yeah, you'd have to go out, let's say you've got 100 customers, you now have to go look at 100 tables and say, all right, and do some math, unfortunately, and say, okay, do I have enough memory, right? So yeah, this is, there is some homework required, given any scenario. Yes, I'm sorry, we'll get, he was first. I'll get to you in a second, he was first.
You just mentioned that the gain is on maximum contention, no, where you have contention.
Yes. So
a lot of dynamic.
Yep.
There is no gain if you are doing only selects, or that is small?
You'll get minuscule, minimal,
okay.
Right? Because we have, like, we have some ISVs. I'm not going to name any names. We have some ISVs that they do, they're like banking systems, right? And they will do these batch processing, right? So they have data coming in, and they'll do, so it's a mix of read and insert and write, right?
Yeah.
And so they're not getting, you know, the 10 to 25 times performance, because they're doing a lot of read and then doing, you know, quite a bit of write and, you know, inserts and updates, right? So it's not just, you know, insert and update. They're doing quite a bit of write. So they'll insert into a table or they'll read from a table in the same stored procedure. They'll read from a table and then insert into, right, into the same, into a table. And so they're thinking, okay, well, you know, they're not getting that 10 to 25 times performance. But what they are seeing is that, you know, this process that took 8 hours is now down to 3. And for them, that's awesome. You ask them, like, great, we just, you know, cut our processing time, this big nightly process time, in less than half. To them, that's awesome, right? But, you know, compare that to the 25 times that BWIN got, you're like, that sucks, right? So, you know, we have to look at it. Right? You know, it's the perception. You know, for you guys and for, you know, Microsoft even went, why aren't they getting 25 times the performance? But if you ask the ISV, they're like, this was awesome. Thank you very much, because we saved them, you know, we cut their process time in less than half, right? So it's all about perception. So it's not just, if you have just a complete read, you're going to get minimal gain. But again, you know, it just depends on what your process is. This is why we look at it, right? So, you know, for these guys, it was significant for them, but it's not the 25 times, right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So it's, same thing, right? You're running out of disk or running out of memory. Same thing, right? This is, yeah, but it's cheaper to add memory now than it is to add disk, right? So.
Or you swap the disk.
What's that?
Or you swap the disk.
Oh, yeah, you swap the disk. Yeah. Yeah.
Did I get a warning beforehand? Maybe I'm
rebooting. Yes, so there is a, and I'm not quite sure what the warning is, but I think there's some mechanism to say, yes, we are running, you're getting close, right? And if you email me, I'll get that information for you. Yeah. So it's not like, crap, I can't do any more inserts because I'm out of memory, right? So there is some things. I think there's something in there that, right? And there are some other reports too. And I'll actually show you this in the next demo. There's some reports that you can look at to go, how am I doing, right? So I don't think there's, I'm not going to say 100% if there's an automatic, you know, notification that says you're running out of, you know, buckets, right? But there are reports that do tell you, look, here's your current status, here's how you're doing, right? So for V1, we actually, you know, to be honest, I'm Microsoft, but even with that, you know, I think V1's great because we don't just leave you hanging, right? We got great tools, great reports that you can look at to go, look, what's my status and how am I doing? Am I running out of memory, right? Which is, I think, a great tool. Yes. Well, I think the guy behind you had a question. Oh, go ahead. I saw your hand.
Yeah.
So you can do a couple things, right? If you're really running out of memory, so the other thing is, look, you can, and actually show you this, and then so there is a garbage collection process, right? So you can actually free up memory by getting rid of data, right? So it depends, like the one of the demos I'll do here in a second is that shows you how to do garbage collection. So it'll actually free up memory if you actually delete data out of the in-memory table. But if you need to keep that data around, then you either move some of that to disk or increase your memory, right? So it's not, yeah. Just like this gentleman said, you're either disk bound or memory bound, and you either have to add disk or add memory, or just like you do in disk, either get rid of data or things like that, right? We can only work within the limitations of the mechanical limitations, and that's either memory or disk, right? So same thing, right? We can't automatically just go, I'm going to create more memory, right? Yes. Well, yeah, so you can, like I said, and so, but we're talking, I think, apples and oranges there, right? So if you run out of bucket count, then you just, alter table, right, things like that. But, but then there's also the, look, I'm running out of physical memory type of thing, right? So bucket count, yes, I can fix that by increasing the bucket count, right? And that's, I think you have to drop and recreate the table, but we persist the data. We don't care about your data. We're just going to create the, yeah. No, so yes, we do persist, right? So you can recover from that. But then there's the other end of the spectrum is I've just run out of complete physical memory, so I need to either increase memory. But the bucket count, yes, I can increase the bucket count, right? Yes.
It's one of the most biggest tables there. It's insert, update, and it's with interfaces to banks. And
yep.
So mostly we see a solution on the SQL side, but it doesn't come in the whole Microsoft.
Right. Yes. I'm not a Dynamics guru. I don't think I've ever opened it. Right. But I think what they're... how do I answer this in the right way? So I think what they're going to see is that once you start seeing this proven among other things, then this technology will start migrating to other applications, right? And there's no reason, not to make an excuse, but there's no reason that those that are running Dynamics couldn't say, all right, I'm going to make these tables and do it on their own, right? So please, if you want to do that, have at it, right? We'd love some success stories around, hey, I improved performance and Dynamics around this, right? But I think there, if I were to make an educated guess, I would say that they're kind of waiting to see how this works out, right? And probably it could be that maybe there might be some limitations. For example, one of the limitations in V1 of Hekaton is it doesn't support MARS, multiple active result sets, right? So we have a lot of ISVs that are like, we do MARS, we can't use this yet, right? So that might be a limitation of Dynamics. I don't know Dynamics, but that might be a limitation of why Dynamics, right? So there's some limitations like that that might prevent something like Dynamics of using this, right? So I'm not saying that is the reason, I'm just saying that might be because I don't know Dynamics, right? But, feel free, if you're using Dynamics, have at it and let us know. We'd love to say, this dude did it, sweet, right? And then it's a win-win for both, right? Okay, so we've got 15 minutes left. Let me just look to see. I've got some slides, but I don't want to. Yeah, let me just go. Okay, I'm going to go about through four slides really quick and then jump out to another demo. Is that okay? All right, because I think this demo shows who was asking about the garbage collection and memory stuff and things like that. A few of you, right? So I definitely want to get to that, right? So I'm getting to... management. I thought I had a management. Okay. Actually, sorry. This is the management. I don't want to... let me get into memory management. That's what I want to get into. Sorry, not to jump around. I want to get into management. Because other slides were like isolation level and things like that. And I don't want to take the 15 minutes and just slide you to death. So I'm going to do a few slides and then do another demo. All right. So basically memory management, right? So again, we talked about this. This is, the memory resides in The data resides in memory at all times, so there's no paging. We don't get that contention, right? You got to configure the SQL box to make sure you have enough, right? We do use the resource governor quite a bit post CTP1, so even with the RTM version, right? So we do bind a database sort of to the resource governor, so we can kind of get this, some level of, I don't want to call it throttling, but there's some level of throttling going on there, right? Okay, these are sort of the best practices, right? So you got table data. So the rule of thumb is 2 times the data size. So we'll look at that in a database, right? And then there are a set of DMVs and DMOs and SQL Server Management Studio that will tell you, and we looked at this in that last demo. Please use the reports. Please use some of these DMVs and DMOs, like and I'll actually show you this in the next demo. What these DMVs look like, because they're like sys.dm or sys.dm underscore db underscore XTP. So anything that has XTP in it is the system store procedures or system DMOs and DMVs that are specific to the in-memory OLTP. Right? We'll show you those. So, what's that? Okay. Yeah. You got. There's a lot. You'll have to learn them. Okay. This will be the last slide. Then I'm gonna jump out and do a demo. Right. So a few scenarios. Things like you were asked, right? Inserting more rows than rows that can fit into memory. Right. So at that point, your transactions start failing. Right. Recovering database that does not fit into memory. The database does not come online. Right, so things like that. Memory pressure from Hecaton workload on other workloads, right? So operations on other workloads start failing, right? So if you start seeing these kind of things, you're like, okay, I'm either out of memory, my bucket count's too low, things like that, right? So this goes back to a couple of your questions, right? We could, from Microsoft, right? So read the error log, right? And look at the reports, right? Look at the DMVs. Because, and the way I say this, right, is, there's a solution: free up memory, or add memory, or look at those long-running transactions, right? Because transactions also start taking up memory, and unwanted memory, right? So if you have a long-running transaction, that's going to start taking up memory, and the memory that you don't want to be utilized, right? So let me answer it this way: we could go, I'm going to automatically update your bucket count, right? Or we could do some automation things like this. But I think there's liability on our side that we don't want, because then you could come to us and start screaming like, well, you did this. You know, there's a certain level to where Microsoft will go, and there's a certain level where you guys got to step up and say, all right, it's our responsibility to start monitoring this, right? It's just like SQL in a VM, right, in Windows Azure. Or even you don't want us reaching into your VM and start poking around, right? Security. This is kind of the same thing. You don't want us just going, well, I'm going to make a guess about how he wants to run his database. Nope, we're not doing that. We will give you the tools and give you the tools to do it the right way. And at that point, you go, all right, we now need to take some ownership and responsibility. And we do that through the DMVs, through the reports and things like that to say, how am I doing? Right? And then the ability to say, all right, well, I'm just going to update the bucket count and go. Right? Or, I'm, you know, so the, again, like your question, like I'm either out of bucket count or out of physical memory, right? So I need to monitor both of those. The concept here is that hopefully you see the benefits enough to go, this is awesome, I can get better performance, and I'm willing to say, okay, I need to now work with, you know, physical memory and bucket count limitations, possible limitations, right? So one should outweigh the other, right? And it just depends on your specific scenario, right? Okay, so let's, 10 minutes left, so let me jump out and do another demo. Yes, I will change the screen so you can see it. Okay. There we go. So let me get rid of this one. And let me open memory management. So this is going to be a fairly simple demo, but it should show you how you can free up some memory and start looking at the reports and things like that. And some of the DMVs, right? So I'm going to create a new database called in-memory test. Same thing like you saw, just a very simple example about, you know, this is an in-memory database. The database isn't in memory, but as you see, I'm adding a file group. That file group will contain in-memory tables. All done. I'm going to set the isolation level to snapshot just because. I'm going to use that database. And now I'm going to create a table called T1. Right, that is an in-memory table, as you see. Memory optimized equals on, durability equals schema and data. Okay? So we have this report. Right? So remember, there's two, you have to go to different places for the report. So from the in-memory, looking to see what objects I need to move, that's going to come from your, I know what I need to do. That's going to come from that MDW or your metric database, right? What I need to do is for this one, for this report to say, how am I doing from memory? That report I need to pull from this specific database because the report is, I need more memory on my box. We'll give it a second, right? But while that's doing that, let's insert some, I want to show you this. So let's wait a second. We got 10 minutes, so give it a second. Any questions? Is this all making sense? How's the data persisted? So I mentioned this a little earlier, right? So, and this is, we don't have time to get into this, but I'll just say this. So when we write to memory. I mean, it is in memory, but we also write a transaction to a transaction log, and it's a modified version of the whole record, right? So it's kind of asynchronous scenario, right? I write to memory, but then asynchronously I write a modified transaction to the transaction log, right? So we persist it that way, just like we do, right? So we're not taking up, but so we're not reading from the log, right? So we're persisted in memory, but we do have this transaction log thing still going on. That way, if the vacuum lady knocks out the cable of the box and we have to reboot, we can still rebuild and we can recover. From a year ago? So we're going to recover from whatever's in that table, right? So it's not like we're not flushing anything out. It's all in memory, right? So whatever you have in that table is what's in that is what's in memory. Correct. Oh, what's that? Right, yeah, so you can still recover. You know what? So let's take this offline because I want to get through this. I do want to answer your question. I'm not trying to put it off. I will come to that. Let me just say, yes, we can recover from that, right? But we'll take that offline, right? All right, so we just created this in-memory test, right? So if we go to in-memory test, reports, memory usage by memory-optimized objects, right? We see... this information, right? So we can see the index usage memory, right? So how much is index? Each bucket is 8K, I think. So times a million or times whatever. So it's like it could be eight meg or 8 gig, right? Depends on how much, right? So we see here the blue system allocated memory, green would be table used memory, things like that, right? So right now we have a table, no data in it. But all this is just, this is index, because we created an index on it, right? So let's go back here, and let's insert some rows, right? So again, red is memory taken by object. Each bucket takes 8 bytes. So depending on how much, right? So 8 times whatever, how many rows is going to be, right? This was a million, right? So it's going to be 8 times, 8K times a million. All right, so let's run and insert. We're going to insert, 100,000? Right? Just want to take a couple seconds. All right, so let's go back and let's refresh the report. Okay, so refresh. We now see, right? So we see this much is taken by index, this much is taken by, 13.73% by data in that table. Can we move over there? Right? Table unused memory, things like that, right? So you can start to see how this is starting to stack up, right? So let's go back and let's add another table to that. And that's also memory optimized. Okay, and we're going to insert several million rows in that one as well. Okay, that should take a little bit. Okay. So, you know, we could go back and look at the report, right? So we can refresh the report, and it's going to change a little bit, but no, we don't care about that. What we do want to show is this, right? So here's one of these DMVs that you want to look at if you're monitoring, right? So sys.dm.db XTP table memory stats. This is one. So if we did like this, sys.dm underscore db underscore XT, I think we have to do select star from sys.db underscore dm underscore XTP. Is that it? Nope. DMDB. We'll do that. Dot DMDB underscore XTP. So look at all those XTP stores, right? DMVs. These are kind of one of the ones you want to start getting familiar with, right? So let's look at that. All right, so here we see two tables, right? So T1, memory used. Okay, so look, so pay attention to this number, 14,062. Okay, remember that number. Okay, so we're gonna, because what we're gonna do now is we're going to go through into T1 and delete every other row. Okay, just for it's gonna be a, we just I randomly decided every other row, right? Just for fun. Okay, so let's delete that. This will take a second. Okay, now let's go run, right? Watch that. So 8016. Oh, it actually freed up. So remember, it was, what was it? What was the number? 14,000? Right? Yeah, so remember, it just automatically dropped, right? And if we did this fast enough, right? So we can actually go back to our report now. If we did this fast enough, right? So now you see that things are changing. And had I been quicker on the you know, on the control E on the run, we would have seen that we would have seen that number drop. You know, F5, we would have seen that number drop down to 8,015, right? So this is just to show, look, it does do garbage collection, it does free up memory. It just doesn't, you know, it's not like one of these systems that reserves it and says, okay, I'm going to keep this around. It will actually clear it up. So to go back to your question, if you don't need it, get rid of it, because it'll clear up that memory, right? Okay, now while I'm here, before I delete the database, I wanted to show you this. So right mouse click, properties. Okay, so it does say, so you can look here, right? Memory used by memory, so you can get an idea of how much memory you currently have in memory utilized, right? How much memory is allocated to that, right? And that will change as you start doing garbage collection, right? If we go to file groups, you see, okay, here's my file group that is part of the file group, right? And you start to see, if I look on a table then, if I go to one of these tables, let's look at this one and the properties. We can see this is taking storage. Here's how much memory this is taking. So data space, you know, 7.5 gig. So now you have to start doing the math. Okay, well, again, this is in memory, so I'm just showing you this. For a disk-based table, you'd have to look at this. All right, this is taking this much space on disk. I need this amount of memory to be able to move this to in memory for a best practice standpoint. That makes sense? All right, so this is where you start looking. Please use the DMVs. Please use the reports as you start looking at this. Start playing around. There's plenty of documentation. I have 1 minute left. All right, so I'm going to throw this up again. Okay, not that one. That one. Okay, so if you have any questions, I will be outside. I'm happy to answer any questions as far as logging and transactions and things like that. Whatever you want to. If you, I appreciate you coming. We are out of time. Any questions? I'll stick around for a few minutes. But thanks for coming. Appreciate it.